the last couple of weeks we've been studying. We've been studying the whole this mystery of obedience and how it's described in the various ways of your thought and your speech, and the idea of what the salt is, and the oracle of God is where you should speak from. And now the last of this kind of instruction, if you will, in Paul's letters is 2 Corinthians chapter 10. So let's go there. This is one of Paul's last letters. He became a believer in 34, probably. He wrote his first letter. His first letter was the Galatians, and that was 21 years later, AD 54. So there's something important about that, in that he who had such an incredible conversion experience at Damascus Road, and his understanding and knowledge of the scriptures and all that, he still didn't feel, apparently from what we know anyway, he didn't feel comfortable in writing down what his instructions were for 21 years. Now that should give us some idea of what this battle that we are in is about. So let's look at that. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, starting verse 1. Now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am base among you, but being absent am bold toward you, I beseech you that I may not be that I may not be bold when I am present with you, with that confidence wherewith I think to be bold against some which think of us as if we were walked according to the flesh. Now that's the idea here, walking according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. Well, this is the final instruction in those discussions about salt and oracles and all the stuff we've been looking at. Is this bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, casting down the strongholds?
Well, chapter 10, verse 5 that you just read, that almost encapsulates what being a disciple is, in a way.
Right. Now, that's what being a disciple should be.
Or should be.
Strongholds is a word It's okuroma. Okuroma. I'm sure that I translate or speak these words. I don't even know they're. I don't know how to pronounce them. So, anyway, it's anything which the word means anything on which you rely on. It really has the same meaning as mammon. You can't serve God in mammon. Mammon, remember, is the Chaldean word that was brought into the language to describe anything you can rely on. So mammon is really the strongholds that are keeping you and us from being a full disciple. Because we have these strongholds, and our arguments in favor of the strongholds are so attractive to us that we defend ourselves without even and justify ourselves without even thinking about what we're doing, because these are the formal, impenetrable strongholds of, for us, the evil one. So casting down, let's read it again. We'll go through it as we read it. The weapons of warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Now, we think the pulling down of the strongholds comes from, well, one argument is that it's God that's pulling down the strongholds. But when you go down to the end result of bringing every thought into the obedience of Christ, the obedience of Christ is already fulfilled. It's only your disobedience or rebellion that's keeping the thing alive. Does that make sense? Your strongholds are anything that you rely on. And they're all in your mind. Everything we rely on. Everything you've been taught. What is good behavior? What is proper way to raise children? What is your duty to society? What is your, anything that you've been taught or that you've reasoned for yourself? That's what the word means, stronghold. Anything you rely on. It's like I used to be somewhat of a football fan, believe it or not. I went to every game, here and away. This is back in the 60s. And I had zero ability as a coach, but every game I had, if the play didn't go right, I had an opinion about what should have been done. And at this season, which is the drafting of the players, man, I was full of opinions. I had an opinion about any one of the draft picks that I had known about or heard about. And you know, at cocktail parties and going out for a drink, it was great fun to give your opinion, show the others that you're right, show what you rely on in terms of your knowledge of football. I'm talking about me now. There may be others it applies to. But all of a sudden, I woke up one day. It was even before I, shortly before I was a believer. And it just, all that crap just seemed silly to me. And so I just stopped doing it. The same with politics. For 10 years, I was immersed in politics. everything from, I was campaign chairman for several people, I ran for the legislature, I was a delegate to the 1968 convention. And I had 1,000 opinions that I relied on about the proper way to run a government. And boy, did I rely on them. The test came right after my conversion. There was this group that came to me that wanted me to run for governor, which just sounds ludicrous to me now. I mean, it just sounds like it was like a cartoon character running for governor. But the point of it is, something changed before in my mind and my ways of thinking about stuff. I still think of, like, my favorite places in the world, the two favorite places, like Beirut, Lebanon, and the whole countryside of New Zealand. Well, that's crazy. Why would those be favorite? I think the only reason they were favorite is there were more beautiful women per capita there than I'd ever seen anywhere else. But that probably was what bottom result of why it was favorite. But now it just seems silly. What I'm trying to get to is, all of us we're immersed in strongholds. We have an opinion about how to raise children. We have an opinion about manners and eat. We have opinions about everything. And if you think about how strong your opinions are, I mean, so here we are. We are believers with opinions. And then comes Paul. This was written 27 years after he became a believer. And now he's writing with more and more authority. Everything your mind does, thinks of. It's not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can it be. So, then the instructions are, what do you do about the strongholds? Well, the only way you can deal with the strongholds is, number one, is you've got to kind of see the stupidity of them before anything else can happen. Otherwise, you can't give up something that you like. Somehow, something has to happen by the Holy Spirit to show you that those things that you rely on they're not universal. In other words, you know, you may say, well, I rely on my abilities to do X, but when you look around and see, well, there's guys that do X that have nothing and have a billion times more money than I have, so why? Well, I mean, and there's a lot of people who do it better than I, whatever it is. So somehow, we've got to come to this idea of that these strongholds are the same strongholds that were revealed to us in metaphor in the land of Canaan. There were seven tribes on these seven high places in the land of Canaan, and God said, this is the Holy Land. But he told the people that they had to go through that holy land and wipe out every man, woman, and child of those opposing tribes. And that sounds just, that's where these people get the idea that that was when God was mad at us. Now he likes us. Now he just wants to love us. No. Everything that happened to them in the Old Testament is a metaphor, is an instruction to us. Now, I ask you, what else could that mean when it says casting down the high places, other than the tribes in your mind, the seven peaks on which the whore is sitting? Let's go to Revelation 17 for a minute.
So those seven mountains of your mind are really the inborn and developed character traits and behaviors that you continue to hold on to?
You know, I mean, you don't need to try to describe them. Those are parts of it, but they're stuff you can't even recognize. Let's go here.
Where do we go?
Revelation 17. And there came one of the seven angels which had seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, and I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. Now, if you go over to verse 15 quickly, and it says, And he saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are the people and multitudes and nations and tongues. That's everybody. Now, who could believe that the whore of Babylon, who all these Christian scholars say is somebody over there, who could possibly believe that it's what their mind is? Isn't that what your mind has done its whole existence? Is to teach you how to have confidence in things? Teach you how to get by, teach you how to get whatever it is. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. We get drunk on the wine of self-seeking. That's the wine of Ephraim. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold, with precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. Now remember, we said every one of those things are something that you want. Whether it's the clothed and scarlet covered, rayed in purple, decked with gold, precious stones, pearls, having the golden cup in her hand. And the golden cup contains everything else that you think you want. Now, in the Gospel and the Stars, that golden cup is sitting on the serpent to even give it more credibility. Now, and again, then upon this forehead of this woman was a name written: Mystery, Babylon the Great, the Mother of Harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Now, isn't that what she's trying to do? Kill the saints, make you of no purpose to God? She's married to someone. Who's she married to? She's married to the Antichrist. And you You are the Antichrist, the instead of Christ. And you have to come out of Egypt in the Passover before any of this would even make sense. But now, the second Passover is coming out of Babylon. And so you leave all of these things that we've been talking about. The same place, you mean in the same way you left the world and the value systems of the world. These are universal. Every man that has ever lived is subject to them. The biggest one is cause and effect. That's what we've learned, how we've learned to exist by cause and effect. And that is the religion of Babylon. Just like in the world, it was the survival of the fittest. Egypt. And we found out we weren't fit, and so the exodus from the world seemed like a great idea. Well, now we got to exit from Babylon. We're going to take a little bit more time on this one, but anybody have any response? Lisa, did you ever hear this before?
Hear what?
No, I'm serious. And either the tapes you listened or
yeah,
the...
I think I
have. Okay, good. Because we've mentioned it in here hundreds of times, but it doesn't tick, it doesn't sit until certain things are in line in terms of one's understanding. And then what happens then is, if you hear it, then my God, it's, I've never heard the scriptures before. If you don't hear it, then you'll justify your way out of it. It's getting harder and harder to do. But I promise you, your mind is what you rely on. So it is its natural, its order, its purpose is to keep you from understanding this. If you try to understand this with your mind, you're dead meat. Because he will always change it to be acceptable. Well, I'm not thinking. Try to convince you that your thoughts are the mind of Christ, just like he does the success theology. Well, I assume from everyone's silence that you totally understand 100% and agree with everything.
I have a comment, as usual. When we first started, something was said about the evil one, say all the time, but somewhere I redefined it as the evil nature, and it made it different in seeing my total nature is evil, in the sense that I'm all about, you know, protecting self, advancing self. That's all self in me is interested in. So that's more a description or more meat on the idea of the nature of the beast. And then when you kept talking, everything kind of fell into place because I could relate to each aspect. That's my nature. That's you know, I love the whore, you know, I love the gain. All of that is intrinsic. And if I try and put a religious veneer on that old nature, that's as evil as it can be, because I would be buying the total deception that is everywhere in the world.
Amen. Let's go quickly to Isaiah 57.
Underlining here,
He calls us the sons of the sorceress.
58:7.
In verse, we're the sons of the sorceress, the seed of the adulterer and the whore. That's who he described. That's who we are. Against whom do you sport yourselves? Against whom make you a wide mouth and draw out the tongue? Are you not children of transgression, a seed of falsehood, inflaming yourselves with idols under every green tree, slaying the children in the valleys under the cliffs of the rocks? Among the smooth stones of the stream is thy portion. They are thy lot. Even to them hast thou poured a drink offering. Thou hast offered a meat offering. Should I receive comfort in these? Upon a high and lofty mountain hast thou set up thy bed, and there wentest thou up to offer sacrifice. Behind the doors also on the post dost thou set up thy remembrance. For thou hast discovered thyself to another than me, or uncovered yourself, and art gone up, thou hast enlarged thy bed, and there made thee a covenant with them, and thou lovest their bed where thou sawest it. And thou wentest to the king with ointment, and did increase thy perfumes, and did send thy messengers far off, and did debase thyself even unto hell. Now, this is the lot of the human race. And we are up there fornicating on the bed, and we believe and we say that we're doing it to God, for God. All right, that's enough to present yourself for a while. Have a good weekend. Take it big time.